Our second case is 2021-66, Vasily Bunta versus Furman D. Mast. Counsel?
Chief Justice O'Connor, may it please the court, my name is Owen Rarick, and along with my partner, Matt Mullen, we represent Furman Mast, who is also with us here this morning. The Fifth District Court of Appeals recognized that the thrust of Mr. Bunta's argument was that he was not compensated for his membership interest when the LLC dissolved. So the issue is and always has been, well, what compensation was he entitled to at dissolution? And where do we find that answer? We find that answer by looking at the operating agreement. The operating agreement provides that the members were not entitled to compensation for their membership interest at dissolution because the liabilities to creditors of the LLC exceeded their assets. And the jury also found.
Did the first enterprise, you say that their liabilities exceeded their assets?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Did they liquidate any of those assets to take care of their liabilities?
Yes, Your Honor. And here's how. First of all, what we're dealing with, their assets involved rare vacuum kilns. There's only a few in the world, and so there's not much of a market for them, if any. And so what they did, they took those assets, and with the bank's approval, their creditors' approval, they entered into an assumption agreement with a new entity, Superior Lumber. They sold those assets to Superior Lumber, the new entity, in exchange for Superior Lumber assuming all obligations in excess of $1 million in loan obligations that
Vacuum Press had. Who made up the lumber, the second company?
I didn't catch that, Your Honor.
Who were the owners? Were the investors? Who owned this?
Sure. Everybody other than Vasily Bunta.
Okay,
that is
the
true.
Same people, or some of the same people that were in the first enterprise, then establish, they roll the assets over to the Superior Lumber, and that happens to be Mr. Mast and siblings and father. Is that right?
Your Honor, they did that after they dissolved. They dissolved and they did that because at the time, here's the problem with the first entity, why they had to dissolve. The sawmills, Mr. Bunto had a prior business where he owed these Amish-owned sawmills.
Right. And they wouldn't do business anything he was associated
with. That's right. And that lumber, so we couldn't, Vacuum Press couldn't get the lumber that's the lifeblood of their company. They need lumber to put in their kilns to dry and sell. Without that, they're failing. They can't make monthly payments, and that matters to Mr. Mast and his father, who have put their life savings on the line, signed personal guarantees, mortgaged the farm, mortgaged the roofing business. They're failing. They go to a meeting of the members in March of 2016, and Mr. Bunta states that he wants an exit plan, which makes sense because the business is having these problems. So faced with the option of do you do a fire sale of these assets when there's no market for it, which would result in a bank default and financial ruin for the Mast family, or is there another solution? Because what the operating agreement and the Limited Liability Act and Revised Limited Liability Act require, first and foremost, that at dissolution, you make payment to your creditors or adequate provision for payment to your creditors. And that's what they did. And that's what the bank allowed them to do by entering into this assumption agreement. And Mr. Bunta was able to walk away without any obligation. And the hope was that Superior Lumber, the new entity, could eventually resurrect these relationships with the Amish-owned sawmills so they could get that lifeblood back into the business.
And that happened?
To some extent, Your Honor, because a year later, and that's how Mr. Bunta, I'm sorry, I forgot to mention, if I can reserve 4 minutes of my time, but Mr. Bunta, his expert, when he was looking at damages, did not look at what the VacuPress was worth at dissolution. He did not consider, his acknowledgement, he did not consider what debt VacuPress owed to its creditors. Instead, about a year later, he found a personal financial statement of Furman Mast, where he indicates what the new entity was worth. A year later, a year after dissolution, and from that, in his words, he extrapolated and estimated what VacuPress a year earlier would have been worth. Acknowledging, though, he did not factor in what the bank debt, what the liability to creditors was. And that is, that's the problem, Your Honor, because our position is that you look to the operating agreement, you look to the Limited Liability Act, not tort law, when we're deciding what compensation, if any, the members are entitled to.
Let me ask you a little bit about the jury verdict. So the matter goes to a jury. There was a fiduciary duty claim, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And the jury didn't award any damages for that.
Right.
But it did award damages, $231,000 for conversion, $45,000 for unjust enrichment. And you know, your argument is that the conversion claim at least should not have gone to the jury.
Yes, Your Honor.
You know, juries are somewhat practical. If that had been the case and the conversion claim had not gone to the jury, isn't there a reasonable probability the jury may have said, okay, well, we're going to award damages for breach of fiduciary duty if the conversion claim hadn't been in front of it?
I don't think so, Your Honor, because the jury interrogatory's answers on the fiduciary duty claim were very specific, and one of them was that they said that Furman Mast, as manager of the LLC, acted in good faith in the management of the LLC, in the dissolution of the LLC, and the winding up of the LLC. So I think they focused on that very clearly. So how then did they arrive at this number for conversion? I believe what we have here is exactly what this court warned about in the Zucchini case. In Zucchini, the court stated that traditionally, we're going to have conversion for tangible chattels only, recognize some extension for intangible assets, but I think very clearly warned and cautioned that we've got to be careful with that, because the court said judicial ingenuity and frankly, attorney ingenuity could expand the scope of conversion far beyond in using it to for issues that have wholly distinct legal principles that already apply to it.
So, counsel, when you use it for intangibles, there's, for want of a better phrase, there's got to be a paper trail mm-hmm. that is going to establish that you took that intangible, whatever that might be, here it's finances, okay, and you, in some way, can demonstrate, not you, but Mr. Bunta's responsibility, burden, was to demonstrate that by records that those intangibles were intact and converted to Superior Lumber, and there's a paper trail that shows that.
Well, I don't think so, Your Honor. I think what he needed to show is there's no dispute. VacuPress dissolved. There was a dissolution there. And so what we have to determine at that point in time, how much compensation was
so at that point in time, you say he has no, or the Masts have no duty to consider any of the intangibles belonging to Mr. Bunta. They're just looking for a number that will buy him out.
That's right, Your Honor, because at that point in time, he has no ongoing membership interest, no ongoing right to share in the profits and losses of the LLC, because it's done. It's over. That LLC is over. So that's a finite period of time where we looked, well, what is he entitled to? And Mr. Mast's duty was to first take care of his creditors. because it makes sense. For a limited liability company, obviously the members have the protection of that limited liability. So they don't owe individually the debts of the corporation to the creditor. But with that comes responsibilities. They can't pay themselves at dissolution before they pay those creditors. And so that's the position Mr. Mass found himself in. I've got to take care of my bank. My bank's looking over my shoulder saying, what are you going to do about this? The solution was the best that they could find was this assumption agreement. And the jury looked at it and said that, yes, he acted in good faith in winding this up. And Justice DeWine, you know, back to the issue of how did they end up with this amount for the conversion verdict, the Kinney Court indicated when we have wholly distinct legal principles that apply, here's the operating agreement and the Limited Liability Act. If we apply something else, like tort law in this situation, we're going to lead to results that are confusing, unnecessary, and improper. I think that's what we have here. It's confusing. You keep giving claims to the jury that don't belong, and they find one that's inconsistent with the breach of fiduciary duty. I think that's the kind of thing that happens, and that's the kind of thing that we need to avoid against.
Well, I guess the challenge here, though, is that if the jury thought that there was conversion committed here, it's hard to understand how there wouldn't also be a breach of fiduciary duty. And, you know, I understand your point that this is not an appropriate case for the conversion claim, but a jury that thought that an asset, there had been improper dominion exercised over an asset would almost have to think that there was a violation of the fiduciary duty. So it's hard to reconcile those two findings.
To the extent it's hard to reconcile, I think it's because it's confusing. The conversion claim should have never been in there, Your Honor, because if we look solely at the wholly distinct legal principles that apply, the operating agreement and the breach of fiduciary duty, the jury told us what they thought specifically on the fiduciary duty. And the operating agreement, we know that Mr. Mast followed what he was supposed to. Under the operating agreement and the Limited Liability Act, he had to pay and provide for payment for his creditors first before he ever paid himself or Mr. Bunta. It's important to point out.
He didn't really provide for payment for the creditors, right? They just, the creditors weren't actually paid here, right?
They're paid through the assumption agreement.
Right. It was basically another entity that did not involve the plaintiff was set up, and everything continued as it was.
I mean,
this was not a case where there was a liquidation and the creditors were all paid off first, and then the plaintiff wasn't able to get paid.
I would say it's not a liquidation in the traditional sense where they sold to an unrelated third party. It's a sale of assets. Couldn't do that here. There wasn't a market for these kilns. But it was a liquidation in the sense that they did sell these assets.
So how do you know that there wasn't a market for these kilns? Mm-hmm. You represented they're very rare, but I would presume very useful in the lumber business. And so how do you know that there wasn't, or how does your client know?
Yeah. Well, there was testimony on that, Your Honor, and it was uncontroverted. And we know that I think there was only one other company in the world at the time that had these, and I believe there was evidence that even they were ramping down on the use of these. And with that, Your Honor, if I can reserve the remaining 2 minutes.
You have 2 minutes left.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. White.
Chief Justice O'Connor, and may it please the court. I am Thomas White, and I am here arguing on behalf of the appellee, Vasil Bunta. My argument focuses upon what I see as two fallacies in the appellant's propositions of law. Number one, appellant identifies what's at stake in this case as, quote, compensation for a membership interest in a dissolved LLC. I disagree. What's at stake in this case is not compensation for an LLC membership interest, that's damages. What's at stake is the conversion of the membership interest itself. Ownership of an LLC is similar to traditional ownership of stock in a traditional corporation. The ownership in an LLC is in membership interests and is usually reflected in percentage interest or in units. Like stock held by stockholders in a conventional corporation, a membership interest in an LLC gives the member the right to participate in the profits and the losses, because federal tax law allows both profits and losses to be passed through to the members, especially in a startup like Superior Vacupress, which is the first LLC in our scenario. There is a tax benefit if, in a startup, you're not making money during the first several years. So it's not the compensation, it's the membership interest itself. And the legislature assists us in our inquiry in Revised Code 1705.17, where Ohio law states that membership interests are defined as personal property. Personal property is subject to conversion. And quite honestly, the court could say, okay, that ends our discussion. If it's personal property, it's subject to conversion. The trial court and the Court of Appeals got it right. However, I submit that an LLC membership also clearly fits within this court's definition of property, which may be subject to the tort of conversion in the Zucchini versus Scripps Howard Broadcasting Company case. Now, the court acknowledged in Zucchini in 1976 that at common law, the tort of conversion, which if I remember my tort class from law school correctly, is the wrongful taking or withholding of the personal property of the owner that results in damages to the owner. I remember thinking Your Honor.
Do you agree that this is based on a contract?
Your Honor, this is based upon an operating agreement. Yes, Your Honor.
And everybody signed it?
Yes, Your Honor.
So why isn't that really the underlying cause?
Because the tortious acts of the manager give rise to the tort of conversion, Your Honor. The wrongful act, the converting of, as I will demonstrate in my argument. Did I answer your question, Your Honor?
I want you to jump ahead to that part where you can demonstrate
you.
That.
Your Honors, what happened here is you have an LLC, Superior Vacupress. My client is a 30% interest holder. There are difficulties between the members and the manager. The record clearly indicates that the first attempt to force my client out was to issue a capital call and say, if you don't give the capital call, we're going to charge you 26% interest per month compounded. When my client resisted that, then we come up with a scheme, the manager comes up with a scheme, let's create a new LLC, Superior Lumber LLC. And what we're going to do is we're going to roll over everything, stock, lock, stock, and barrel, into the new LLC. And therefore, the new LLC becomes a mirror image of the first LLC. There's no dissolution other than letting the Secretary of State know. There's no winding up as both the operating agreement and Ohio law provide.
Counsel, how would it have been wound up? What would you have them do?
Your Honor, he should have attempted to sell the equipment.
Yes.
And
okay.
By the way, the fact that there was discussion that it was rare, Mr. Mast and my client were actually in another partnership to deal in these kilns. So while rare, that just means it's relatively new technology. It doesn't mean that there wasn't a market for it. There is no evidence in the record that he attempted to sell the equipment to satisfy the debts, wind up the LLC, and then pay anything that's left to the members.
But what they did was make provisions for their responsibility to the creditor, the bank.
Yes. Well, actually, there was testimony at the trial, Your Honor, that they didn't tell the bank. that they were doing this. The banker testified over my objection because he wasn't mentioned in discovery. And I said, when did you find out about this change in the LLCs? And he says, I didn't know what was going on until much later when they came in for the to do the paperwork.
Now, okay, to do what paperwork?
To assume the debt over into the name of the new
LLC. Okay, so they couldn't have done that without the bank's approval.
Eventually, yes, but he didn't tell the bank when he was doing it, which is just a further indication that the jury consider that this is tortious conduct.
However,
the bank did sign on, though, right?
They eventually did, yes, Your Honor.
And they were the major creditor?
They were the major creditor, Your Honor.
And the value of the debt exceeded the value of these kilns?
Probably, Your Honor. However, this is still a startup. And when you wrongfully take somebody's membership interest in a startup, you're taking their ability to participate in profits and losses in
that
the future.
Losses. I get that.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. But if the bank signs off, the creditor signs off, they're happy, right? Everybody's happy but Mr. Bunta, right, basically.
Because he wasn't compensated.
Cut out.
Yes, sure.
Right, okay. That. But in dissolving or winding up the first LLC, VacuPress, and the bank does sign off eventually, I agree with you, it's a little later. It does wind up VacuPress, though, correct?
It dissolves VacuPress, Your Honor, because let's say that there is a rewriting of the loan for the new LLC, all right? There is no accounting made as part of the winding up. Whenever we wind up an LLC, a C-Corp, a trust, the person who is the manager, the trustee, has the duty to provide a final accounting to all the members, saying, okay, this is what I had left after I wound everything up. Here's your share.
Didn't you have a claim for an accounting and dismiss that?
Mm-hmm. Excuse me, Your Honor?
Didn't you assert a claim for an accounting and didn't
yes,
you
Your
dismiss
Honor, we
that?
Did.
So, seems odd to be complaining that there wasn't an accounting then.
Well, the accounting that we were asking for, Your Honor, was in order to establish our damages.
If you had an accounting done and it had shown that the value of the assets was greater than the debt, then you would have had a pretty strong claim for damages, right?
Yes, Your Honor. However, there were no documents upon which to base an accounting that we were not able to determine through discovery, which were basically bank accounts. Ergo, the accounting claim, I felt, was not viable after we found out what our damages were. And Your Honor, I'd just like to restate, even if there is a loss upon the wind-up and dissolution, my client has a right to share in that because that's deductible on his taxes.
What was the $231,000 inclusive of net operating losses? As part of that $231,000.
Yes, Your Honor. If you look at my expert's report and the testimony, which is a little choppy, there were a lot of objections,
yes,
et cetera, in there. He took into account the not the operating debt, okay, but he did take into account the future once that debt is paid through time. Because once again, my client didn't get a chance to participate in that.
But if at the time of winding up or dissolution, whatever you want to call it, the debts exceed the capital, he might have an operating loss, but he doesn't have damages per se, except those operating losses, which is a percentage of his income for whatever year.
He could, and this was a major issue between the experts at trial, Your Honor. Our experts said, yes, there was value because this is a startup. This Superior VacuPress had been in existence only for, I believe, a couple of years. It takes a while to pay off your initial operating investment. And what my client was what was taken from my client, I almost said what was stolen from my client, but what was taken from my client was the right to participate in those future profits and losses. And it was wrongfully done, contrary to the operating agreement and contrary to Ohio law. I'd like to move on to the second proposition of law, if I could. In the second proposition of law, appellant argues that LLC managers who comply with their duties in dissolving a company cannot be liable for conversion. Well, that proposition assumes that the manager accomplished his duties and did not just create a mirror image LLC with one flaw, and that is my client is not a member. My client did not receive any accounting different from an accounting as a cause of action, Your Honor, but an accounting as part of the winding up of the LLC. He's just left out in the cold. The courts below said that's conversion. The courts below further, there's an attack upon the concept of unjust enrichment. And you know, I'd agree with my opponent if the unjust enrichment claim was based upon a claim while my client was a member. However, it's very clear in the evidence, and the Fifth District held accordingly, that the unjust enrichment was for services that were performed by my client before he became a member of the LLC.
And why wouldn't the value of those services have been integrated into the LLC agreement?
They weren't, Your Honor. They were just left out, and then there was evidence of discussion between the members and the manager. They acknowledged, yes, we owe you. My client's a Romanian immigrant who is also an engineer. He used his skills to set up the processes with this equipment. And there's testimony. They said, yes, we owe you, but they never paid him.
But isn't that just an additional debt? That winding up or dissolution. If the work was done prior to him joining the VacuPress.
If Your Honor is saying, would my client be a creditor? The answer is yes.
He'd be a creditor.
But once again, that was not taken into account when we just roll everything over into a new LLC. So, suffice it to say, Your Honors, that this is an odd situation. Quite honestly, what I thought we'd be talking about is intangible property in a digital age and whether that's subject to conversion, but I understand that that's something for another court at another time. In this case, my client's membership interest was taken from him without his consent, and that was converted. He has a claim. The jury rendered its verdict. There was some question with regard to what the jury saw as far as the breach of fiduciary duty, et cetera. I can tell you from the record, the foreman was a former barrister from this country of New Zealand, foreman of the grand jury, or a foreman of the jury. So, Your Honors, it was taken, it was converted. The manager failed to fulfill his duties in winding up the LLC, and there was unjust enrichment. I respectfully request that this court affirm the decision of the Fifth District.
I want to go back to the unjust enrichment for one moment.
Sure.
If it occurred prior to him entering into the LLC, isn't his claim against the LLC and not against the manager?
Your Honor, that's a question I thought of when I was drafting up the pleadings and preparing for trial. The LLC was no longer in existence.
Right.
So there's nothing to make a claim against. He dissolved the LLC.
So it was dissolved?
Yes.
You agree with me?
Yes, sir. He notified the Secretary of State that it was dissolved. Okay. It just wasn't wound up.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Your Honors.
Thank you. Mr. Rarick, you've reserved 2 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor, there is no dispute that this LLC was dissolved and that under the operating agreement, the manager had the discretion to dissolve it. Counsel just stated that the problem was he didn't wind it up properly. Well, the jury told us otherwise. The jury said that he acted in good faith in winding up this LLC.
What other evidence exists that you wound it up properly? Was he provided with a letter or documentation?
Yes, Your Honor.
And what did that indicate?
There was a letter in August of 2016 indicating, hey, we're terminating, it's not working out. There's a letter also stating that here are the liabilities, we owe in excess of $1 million to the bank, here's what our assets are worth, you can see we're deep in the hole. The bank agreed with that, that there's no equity in this equipment. So he did the best he could under this situation where they couldn't get the lifeblood, the lumber. Council mentioned this Vacutherm, Ohio Vacutherm business that they had to help sell these things. Well, that didn't work either. They couldn't sell these Vacutherms. And so Mr. Bunta was 51% owner of that LLC. He dissolved that one. They were unsuccessful. The reason why I believe they dismissed the accounting claim is clear, because the accounting claim would go back through the operating agreement and decide what are creditors owed. Is there anything left after that to walk down the hierarchy and to pay membership interest? There wasn't. An accounting remedy would clearly show that, and so they had to expand and go outside the contract, outside the scope of the Limited Liability Act to get this claim. 88% of new businesses in Ohio are LLCs. One-fifth of them fail, or half of them fail, I think, every 5 years. This is a situation that's important. The managers that are winding down these LLCs need to know that they have certainty that if they follow the obligations of the operating agreement and the Limited Liability Act and their fiduciary duties, they won't be subjected to personal liability. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen. We'll take the matter under advisement. You'll be notified of our decision.